Hey everybody, a real quick note before this episode. First, I did want to say a big congrats to the Helsinki folks. I don't know if I congratulated them before, but obviously I'm a big supporter, and so is the Skiffing Fanny Show, and pretty much everyone on the crew, I think, is publicly a big supporter. So it's really awesome that it's going to be in Helsinki, because that's just going to be a great experience. So hopefully we'll see some folks there. Hopefully all of us, or most of us, will actually be able to attend. I also did want to say thank you again for those who nominated us. We also mentioned a thank you in this episode. And I also did want to say a really, really big thanks to all the folks who've been listening to us, whether you're a new listener or an old listener. Thanks so much for supporting us by giving us your ear things. So if you'd like to support us in other ways, if you haven't already, of course, you can go to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. You can support us financially by helping us doing some really cool stuff for the future. So thanks again for being a supporter, for being a listener, for just being there. So on that note, I hope you really enjoyed this episode. We had a real, real blast recording it.
Danger. The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Cake and grief counseling will be available at the conclusion of the test.
She's alive! Alive!
Maybe you should put some shorts on or something if you want to keep fighting evil today.
Why not just put a stake through her heart?
She's not a vampire.
Well, you'd be surprised how many things that'll kill.
We are now seeing the beginnings of another stage of human evolution. At last, we can retire and give up this life of crime.
You and your training wheels.
Hailing frequencies are open.
Hello, sweetie.
Commencing countdown. T-5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fandy Show.
Torch of Cinema, Cat from Outer Space, or The Secret History of What Colonel Potter Did After the Korean War.
Oh, I knew you were going to go there.
Yes!
Yeah. I'm Sean.
I'm Paul.
I'm Julia.
And I'm Rachel.
And today is a Torture Cinema special. Yay!
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 So before we get into the film, we have to talk about what we're all drinking. And it's a special one because I made another special cocktail, which I will share with you all in a moment. But let's start with you, Paul. What happy, delicious thing are you drinking?
I am drinking tap water.
Tap water?
Tap water.
That is a very unique cocktail.
Well
it's a bold choice.
Yes, but don't forget, it's the first thing that Jake got to drink on Earth.
True.
Yeah, I feel like this really only counts if you're also eating chopped up kidney.
And tuna.
I have had neither kidney nor tuna. Although I did go to a North Indian/Tibetan restaurant today for lunch, so I had lamb and chicken and other good stuff. None of it was kidney or tuna, though.
Well,
I'm sure Jake would have appreciated your lunch, though.
I think Jake would have liked the chicken and the lamb.
Probably, yes. And then he would have sat there for 5 minutes going, "More so good, mwah, mwah," and then would have annoyed the shit out of me.
Yeah. Alas, this restaurant does not have any yak, which is a pity. Seriously, have you ever had yak? Yak is good.
I've never had a yak. I don't think I've even met a yak.
Next time you come to Minneapolis, I can hook you up with yak momos.
Fair enough. All right, what about you, Julie? What are you drinking?
I am taking the theme of the movie very carefully and drinking a beer, as the movie tells me I ought to.
Ah, clever! Clever! What kind of beer?
It is a Smutty Nose Old Brown Dog Ale.
I couldn't find
any cat ale.
They don't
afraid.
Make cat ales, I don't think, do they?
No, so I had to go with the dog. That's close enough.
It's theme specific. It works. And after all, the cat doesn't really like that guy, so that's fair. He's sort of like a dog, really, if you think about it. If we reduce the humans to which animal form they would be. That guy's a dog. Frank is a ferret. And Liz is... what would Liz be? I don't feel like she's a cat.
A goldfish?
Oh, okay. We will save that for later. Rachel, what about you? What are you drinking?
So I am drinking a cocktail that my amazing bartender housemate created for me a couple of weeks ago called the Squirrel Whisperer. in honor of a troll in my comments section.
Oh, that was in honor of Sean and I and the albino squirrels.
Oh, it could also work for that too. And what it contains is amaretto, Kraken, creme de cacao, and some Crown maple whiskey.
Wow, that is like hardcore.
That sounds really sweet.
Yeah.
It is very sweet.
Nice.
Very it smells so mapley.
Nice. Well, good job.
I feel like it might be really good to have that in the middle of winter by a roaring fire.
I think it would. Yeah. I wonder how. Yeah. No, that'd be good. You're right.
That could be very good. Yeah. All right. Well, I also have a theme specific or film specific concoction. And I am calling it a space age cat's meow because
I feel like you should have gone with the artichoke.
Yeah!
I don't want anything that tastes like a vegetable in my
mouth
right now.
But that thing didn't even look like an artichoke.
No, that's true. But that would have left me with artichoke or mayonnaise as my ingredient choices. None of which sound delicious.
I feel like you could take the spirit of the movie and call it an artichoke when it is in fact nothing like an artichoke.
Yeah, it could be sparkling purple and you'd call it an artichoke.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, that is also a possibility. But that's not what I did, because I was trying to look for cat-themed cocktails, and there is something called a cat's meow, which is, depending on who you ask, it's either whiskey and amaretto, or...
Ooh. That's
whiskey
good.
And blended with vanilla ice cream. So I decided, why do I have to pick one? Let's make my own concoction out of both. So this contains the cheapest whiskey I could buy.
Oh, no.
Sorry. Sorry. It looked authentic, if that helps.
How does a whiskey look authentic?
It had a black label and it was in a glass bottle.
Oh, it came in the glass bottle instead of the plastic one.
I looked at the plastic ones and I was like, well, there's a plastic one that's $1 cheaper, but this one's in a glass bottle, so it feels more of a legit.
Oh, dear God.
But in any case, I'm also blending it with stuff. You don't want to use expensive whiskey for that.
Well, yeah.
No, so, I beg to differ. If you use the top shelf stuff for your blended drinks, it's often even more delicious.
Well,
also
just,
true.
Okay, so cheap whiskey. I've got amaretto. I have fresh spearmint from my garden.
Ooh.
Root beer and of course, the ice cream blended together into a concoction.
I'm not sure how I feel about mixing root beer and mint.
Yeah, like the mint is the thing in there that I'm unsure about. Everything else sounds good.
You know, it tastes pretty good.
Well, that's all good. Right.
Yeah,
that's
but you
counts.
Can make it without the mint. It would just be, it would just, instead of being a space age cat's meow, it would be sort of like the dilapidated NASA space program cat's meow, I guess. So there you go. That's what I was drinking. Woo. And I'm going to drink it right now.
You need to cut that out. The listeners do not need to hear that horrible sound.
Yeah, I don't think Sean ever gets to complain again about, you know, someone eating or drinking or consuming something loudly in a movie.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Sean busted.
I almost choked on it, too.
That good, huh?
All right, well, shall we get to this movie, then? Rachel, what is it that we're talking about, and can you describe this film and how it defined you as a young child from the 80s?
So the film in question is The Cat from Outer Space, which is a Disney live-action film that anyone who grew up in my generation will recognize that it's Disney immediately from the weird, slightly creepy and psychedelic Mickey Mouse silhouette that opens the film. But anyway, the story is about a cat who basically makes an emergency landing on Earth because he is a cat from space, but is also a regular cat. But apparently there are just cats that live in space and they're not quite aliens. I don't know. It's very complicated and you shouldn't think about it too hard because it's a kid's movie. And anyway, the cat, who eventually is called Jake, needs to get $120,000 worth of gold so that he can prove that cats are immune to the law of conservation of mass and shrink it down to repair his spaceship. And along the way, he enlists the help of a scientist named Wilson and one of that scientist, the female co-workers and love interests, and I'm really bad at names, I'm sorry, and
Liz.
And then one of the guys that lives in his apartment building, who is really into betting, and that's how they get the money, is by betting money.
He's also a scientist.
Yeah, he studies garbage.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's the garbage scientist. And so
the phrasing is perfect.
and then there's like a random rich
Bond villain,
old white guy who's like a Bond villain reject who wants the cat. For reasons, and it ends with a helicopter chase scene, and Jake stays on Earth because he's in love with Liz's cat, and Jake has a collar that is basically a sonic screwdriver, so I'm actually thinking he might be like a feline Time Lord, but don't quote me.
Dude, that would be cool.
Tell me I just spoiled one of my likes, but I have plenty. The collar is basically a sonic screwdriver. It does like everything he needs it to do.
Right, he can levitate stuff and, like,
speaks telepathically, and yeah.
Speaks telepathically. He can presumably strip people's clothes off.
He can stop time or
he
freeze
can stop
people.
Time?
Well, he's not stopping time. He's just freezing people. He's not stopping time. He's just paralyzing them.
So he's basically like a feline proto Time Lord.
Yeah.
And I mean, when you kind of look at it from that perspective, scientifically, this movie makes about as much sense as your average episode of Doctor Who.
Sorry, Verity.
Well, but that's kind of true, though, that the science in this is
Doctor Who level. Whovian.
It's not science. It's Ents. It's just half of a science.
It's yeah. No, it's not even half of a science.
Okay, it's just the S in science. Maybe half the S.
It's like a C. It gets a
it's
C.
Like a, it's like know. A C. Yeah. It's a sound
it
that is not
actually
heard.
It doesn't even deserve a passing grade.
Just yeah. Because you don't understand the advanced technology of spacefaring cats doesn't mean it's not real science.
Indistinguishable yeah, from magic.
Oh, well, and anyway, we should maybe save some of this because we're going to actually get into it. And since this is, of course, Rachel's movie, and since you are actually on the left side of my screen where I would normally start, that is
okay.
Where we're going to go for our very first like, Rachel, for The Cat from Outer Space. Go!
All right, so I already spoiled one like, which is Jake's collar is basically a sonic screwdriver. So my like is Harry Morgan. Because Harry Morgan. I don't know if I really need to say anything more than that. He's General Stilton, and he spends a lot of time declaiming things in a very firm and vigorous manner as only Harry Morgan can. And he has a riding crop at one point, just randomly, because
yeah,
Harry Morgan.
That a couple times.
Yeah, I mean, and aviator sunglasses, and he is as Harry Morgan as a Harry Morgan can be.
He even smacks computers.
Yes!
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't smack people very often.
Well, it's a Disney movie. Come on.
That's true. But, you know, abuse against computers seems a little that's a little far. Come on.
The computer sassed him.
It's true. The computer did sass him. First told him the truth. When he didn't like the truth, it gave him his sassy response.
Yeah, it's just like, nope, definitely a cat.
That was funny. That was good, yeah.
And I will note that he has... What is perhaps my favorite line in the entire movie, which is, and unfortunately, you know, he delivers it to what is basically an empty room because he's coming out of being frozen by Jake, but he says, "You are under arrest, and the pussycat."
Oh, Harry Morgan.
Yes, he's magical.
I mean, look, like, he's just chewing the lines, but for some reason, I found him charming.
I think it's just, if you grew up watching MASH, you are just like programmed to love everything Harry Morgan does.
That is fair, yeah. Julie, do you have any thoughts?
Not particularly.
Okay,
I did not grow up watching MASH, so I had no frame of reference there.
There's no time like
the
present.
I was just like, there is a dude who is smacking things with a riding crop. That's kind of creepy.
Yeah, it must be the Harry Morgan frame of reference that does it.
And in the background are the dulcet tones of Paul singing the MASH theme.
Sorry, I grew up watching MASH. My father loved the show, so yeah, and it was on Channel 5 in reruns, so we didn't even really watch the first. This is a weird sidebar about my family. We didn't even watch the first one episodes, which were on CBS at night. No, we watched the reruns, which slowly caught up with the first run. But yeah, we watched on the rerun channel, not on the first run channel. But except for when MASH was finally going to end, it was kind of confusing because it was a jump in time for us based on the reruns. It's like, wait, what happened? What? He's going crazy now? What the hell did that happen? Yeah.
Well, the ending of MASH, one of the biggest moments in American television.
I did watch it, so I can say I did that.
So, on that note, why don't we switch to you then, Paul? Your first like.
Okay, it's really going to base right off of Rachel. Not only this movie of Harry Morgan, it also has McLean Stevenson. This movie was the MASH reunion I didn't know I wanted.
Yes!
But I mean, the characters never actually interact in this MASH TV show together because McLean Stevenson's character dies and Harry Morgan replaces them. So they're ever actually on the screen together and never actually do anything. But it's totally a MASH reunion. And for those fans who have never seen the show, especially the early episodes, because everyone remembers Harry Morgan. Not so many people remember McLean Stevenson because he was only on there for like 3 seasons, and then Harry did like 9 or 10. But anyway, McLean Stevenson's character on MASH, his trademark phrase was "Holy mackerel," which he uses in the movie, which I thought was charming.
Oh my god!
Yes, I thought that was charming. Like, yeah, totally a MASH reference. He gave him when the movie came out, which is a couple years after Stevenson had left the show. Yeah, they were clearly channeling the MASH episode. I mean, and the Stevenson character on MASH was kind of not a slob per se, but he was is a very, very loose sort of leader of the 4077. Kind of like McLean Stevenson's character here, who just like barges in and does stuff and is not exactly the most kept man. Whereas by comparison, Colonel Potter or the general in this movie, very hard-edged and very, very, very different. So, yeah, I kept reading this movie as, okay, so this is what Colonel Potter did after he left the 477. He got into military intelligence. This makes sense, maybe?
Totally.
I don't know. So, yeah, so I was charmed by that. I think I've stunned the broadcast at the silence.
I don't really have anything to add because I was just agreeing with you the whole time.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you go, Paul. You go. It's good. It worked out. But, so why don't we switch over to Julia then? Julia, your first like.
Okay, and I don't have anything to say in response to that just because, again, I have no frame of reference. So I'm just like, oh, there may be layers of meaning here that I failed completely to understand. My first like is that I love cats, and anyone who knows me knows that I love cats, and there were 2 cats in this movie, and Jake was actually a pretty decent cat actor, so yay, cats.
Yeah.
Fun fact, Jake is actually 2 different cats.
I did not know that.
Well, both of them were fairly good actors.
Yeah, they used 2 Abyssinian cats for Jake's role.
He was very cute.
Oh my god, he's so cute.
It's actually on my list as like number 0, and it just says, who's a pretty kitty?
Like, even my friend who's allergic to cats and watched this movie with me was like, that cat is really pretty.
Yeah. Oh, he's gorgeous.
I want one.
Also, because it's all about cats, the original trailer for the movie starts out with a little shot of Jake coming out of his spaceship and the caption, it's supernatural.
I remember that, yeah. cat.
Very photogenic.
Oh, God, yeah. He's so cute.
He was so cute, and yes, as cat actors go, he was very good. Both of them were very good. They had very good animal handlers on set, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing that I found remarkable was not just how good he was at, or both of them were, I guess, at following commands and jumping to the right places and stuff, but also at like holding still and appearing to have conversations with people.
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, some of that is the cats being well trained, and some of it I think shows that actually the movie was pretty well edited in that regard, because they managed to pick really good shots of the cat that had just, you know, because cats are a little harder kind of for us to facially read than dogs, because dogs have eyebrows and cats really don't.
Mm-hmm.
But they managed to find shots of takes of the cat where the cat looked like it was emoting just enough of what they wanted that a human would recognize it and be like, oh yeah, you know, he's annoyed.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And my friend who watched it with me, who's Tori, she's watched some of the other torture cinema movies with me, mentioned that she thought she could really tell that this cat was doing a better acting job than the cat in A Talking Cat! ! Which you guys haven't seen, but we really need to watch for torture cinema. Oh my god!
Yeah, especially now, we need to have like dueling cat movies.
Because seriously, you have to see that movie. It's just it's so amazing.
Well, Disney also has another cat movie, The Three Lives of Thomasina.
Oh, that's true. Though Disney does not have a shortage of cat movies. There are plenty.
I know.
Well, Disney knows its target audience. Let's be
honest. I mean, there's also That Darn Cat.
Yeah.
Oh, I love That Darn Cat.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. It makes me think about my kitty.
So what about you, Sean? What's your first like?
Well, my first like was the cat, because I just wrote down, the cat is adorbs. But that one is taken. So I'm going to go with, I really liked Frank. Frank is the main dude, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure I got the right, because, like, whatever. Anyway, I really liked his character as the kooky scientist dude who makes jokes that nobody else seems to get and aren't really that funny, but that's okay because he's kind of charming and cute. And he's just kind of a good all-around dude, minus the fact that he hustles a bunch of mafia gambler people, but, you know, it's all good.
When you need $120,000 in gold now, you do what you gotta do.
Word. Yeah. I think, and I love the moment towards the end of the film when Frank is sitting there and he's like, he's learned that Liz has been kidnapped. We'll probably talk about that at some other venue. I'm sure Julia will bring it up, or probably all of us will, and then we'll scream for an hour. But, that scene when he finds out, right, that she's been kidnapped and he's got to go rescue her, his what he tells Jake to do is just go. You got to go. You're going to miss your flight. You're just going to get stuck here forever. Don't worry about it. Just go. Right? And I love that that's his response, right? It's not like, I need your help because you've got the magic space collar, right? It's go because I'll take care of it, right? Like he takes charge of the situation and is kind of noble in that moment. And yeah, and that's kind of the end of that.
Yeah.
I have a lot of, like, really good likes, because the only real good like was basically me just, like, going, oh, you're so cute, kitty, for, like, an hour. Yeah.
I mean, I do like that Frank had his super sassy moments, like, you know, when General Stilton was like, well, what is it? And he was just like, it's an artichoke. What does it run on? Mayonnaise?
But he doesn't get it. It's like, it's a joke. And then everyone gives him crap for it. And I'm like, no, no, no. Like, he's defusing a situation. It just failed miserably.
And did you not love Frank's amazing Rube Goldberg mouse powered?
Shush, oh, right now. What? They are stealing my second like.
I said nothing.
I do love that that the actor who played Frank was really, really good at talking to a cat.
I mean, that's not that much of a stretch, I say, as someone who talks to a cat all the damn time.
I know. True. I talk to my cat all the time, too. But it's just really nice to see a grown man talking to a cat in a movie. I don't know. There's just something about that. So that's all I got to say. So shall we go to our first dislike?
Yep.
Yep, let's do it.
Rachel, this is going to be hard for you, I know.
No, not really, because I have no problem admitting that there, you know, something that I liked when I was like 7 years old is not going to hold up to the full disdain of my adult self.
Right.
You know, since I know there's one that we're going to want to scream about, I'm going to go for the other big thing that just like made me super like, ah, which was they fucking Mac and Mead the end.
Damn it, you stole my thing. Oh. You, fuck you. Damn it. Damn it.
They did totally Mac and Mead the end, didn't they?
Oh my god. And they made the judge levitate.
Yeah.
They made him say the Pledge of Allegiance. And but at least he didn't drive away in a fucking convertible with this weird space mask face thing where it's clear you can't see out of it. So how the fuck is he driving a convertible? But I digress. Sorry, Rachel. This is your dislike, so you can talk now. I'm sorry.
No, it's. I mean, it is like it's everything that I hated about the Mac and Me ending, where obviously, like, oh, alien creatures from another planet. Of course, their highest goal in life is going to be becoming a citizen of the United States of America. And yeah, I can't even. It's so dumb. And plus extra points because I'm annoyed that they had to use the One Nation Under God version of the pledge, of course, because that always annoys the shit out of me.
Although I will say that that I felt like they made fun of that idea a little bit by the fact that Jake basically doesn't take the whole thing seriously and like levitates the judge. It's, you know, there's a little bit of that kind of like playing tongue-in-cheek a little bit, which does not exist in the Mac and Me version, where they just become Americans and they're, like, dressed up in like, at least he's not wearing a, like a fucking suit, right?
Yeah,
and dressed
that's
up,
true.
Like, and, like, gets in his American car and drives away, which they do in Mac and Me, where, like, why they're wearing dresses? Like, they're aliens. Like, they don't have any external genitalia. They're, like, they're naturally nudists. It's no biggie. I love that film, but that does bug me.
Did you recognize who the judge was?
I did not.
Anthony Scalia?
No. That was Sorrel Book. Boss Hogg.
Oh.
I thought that was cute. Like, it's Boss Hogg. Boss Hogg is the judge. I thought this. Sorry. I know.
Cool.
Again, Dukes of Hazzard. Watched a lot when I was young.
It's See, okay. Again, I just fall down on not having the point of reference. I got a Scalia joke.
That's kind of why we have you here, Paul, is so you can make those connections that we just can't.
Feature and bug, I guess.
All right, well, shall we switch to you then, Paul, for your first dislike?
Okay, my first dislike, okay. Yeah, this has got to be the most incompetent base defense of something under guard in the history of the U.S. Army.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, a guy, a cat, and another guy all break into this base with astonishing ease. I mean, the guards finally start to tighten up a bit, but no, it is absolutely hard. And there's nobody on guard inside with the ship this entire time, so we can have Frank, no offense, go flying around with the greatest of ease and no one see it, because you didn't think to actually have somebody on guard watching the ship, because, well, this is alien technology. It could do anything. You might want to have 24/7 monitoring with your eyeballs of what's going on in the hangar in case it explodes or something. And the guards outside, yeah. Oh God, it was painfully bad. I mean, yeah, I know for plot reasons they needed to get him back into the ship, but they could have tried a little harder, really. Especially since, as Rachel pointed out, they had the sonic screwdriver collar to deal with the problems.
Exactly.
I hated most of what that scene did after they announced the alarm, when Frank is running around with this cat. And for some reason, these hundreds of military men can't see him running around in broad, like, right in the light. Like, right in front of their cars. And he's just, like, running around. And it takes them, like, 5 minutes to notice that he's there.
And I know it's a rated J movie, but in any other rated movie, yeah, bullets would have... lead would be flying.
Or at least they would have seen him.
Or it's like, stop and we'll shoot.
Yeah. But no, it has to be this weird slapstick thing that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I was expecting the Benny Hill soundtrack any moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, Yakety Sax, definitely.
Yeah, that would have done it, yeah.
So.
Well, there you
that's
go.
That's my first dislike.
Fair enough. All right, Julia, what about you?
I'm going to open up the can of worms because I feel like we'll all have stuff to say about this, but I just can't let it wait. There is one woman in the entire movie, Liz, who at first glance, it's kind of cool because she's a scientist, but then you find out that, like, basically her role is to be dumb and a romantic interest and a damsel in distress. And she's never actually allowed to science or to do anything that would be useful or to rescue herself or to have any agency at all, unless it's just like to do something really stupid that will help throw a wrench in the works for the plot that Frank needs to move along. And that's just like really annoying. And then the only other woman in the movie is the cat. Who is also a love interest, and I found the cat love interest to be kind of a really disturbing plot line.
Save that, please. I'm sorry, that's one of my dislikes.
Okay, well then I will let you take on that. But like, basically, I was not down with the treatment of women in this movie at all. I was very saddened and disappointed by it.
Yeah, there was, if I remember correctly, in the artichoke scene. There is actually another female scientist who I don't even think actually talks, but she's there as, like, window dressing. But I was also, yeah, I was like, oh my god, what have you done to Liz? And then Liz becomes a damsel, and so does her cat. Like,
yeah, it's double damsel.
You know, and there was that moment I had this little bit of hope. Because the first time we meet Liz, right, she's in this room with all these scientists, and she keeps trying to, you know, bring her expertise into it, and she gets constantly dismissed by the one scientist dude. I can't remember who he is. The leader scientist man. And so you get this, like, little hope, right, that, okay, but really, you know, Frank, like, recognizes she has real talent, and, like, eventually that's gonna, like, she's gonna power through, and she's gonna basically show all of these stupid, sexist, douche nozzle men that they're idiot. But no, basically all of that. I mean, even
Frank,
the moment when
Frank recognizes that she's cute.
Right, and even the
that's about it.
Yeah, and even the scene when he says, right, oh yeah, you're doing this great work on thermo, I don't remember what they're doing, like thermodynamics or thermo kittens or something. Right. It all in service of that idea that he wants to go on a date with her. Like it's
yeah, like he says that and it's basically like a pickup artist line.
Yeah.
It's horrifying.
Yeah. It's like, and it doesn't need to be. Like, why couldn't
they even get her on board, like, long after they should have gotten her on board with the whole plan that they're all helping out the cat who needs to go back home. When they finally do actually tell her, like, hey, this cat has psychic powers and we're trying to get him back to a spaceship and, you know, we all need to work together. She's like, oh, okay, what can I do to help? And they're like, basically, you can stand here being dumb and we'll somehow turn that into something okay.
Yeah, and this is in the scene when she brought the vet, right, who, against the owner's wishes, as it were, sedated the cat. So the cat can't, like, telepathically communicate, right? So she just accepts it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get to the scene when they use her, right, they use her to play pool because the odds will be better because the implication is she's a woman, so therefore she can't play pool. And what would have made me so happy in that moment is if instead of, like, they actually played that exactly, and then it turned out she's really fucking good at pool, and she won.
And that would have been awesome, but it wouldn't have given them the impetus to use the special effects that they were using.
I know, but
because that whole scene was just there to have the cat, like, be like, yes, I will make pool balls fly through the air.
It's so dumb.
I hated the how she's like, okay, first she doesn't want to have anything to do with Frank. Then like, oh, we have a date, and she keeps showing up like, well, where's our date? Where's our date? Like, what are you, a broken record of any agency?
She doesn't want to have anything to do with Frank because he made the mayonnaise joke.
Right,
like the implication is just like that really upset the general.
Right, but like, remember in that same scene, right, that he indicates that they drive home together. So there's an implied friendship of some degree that's already there. She's mad at him because of the joke he made.
Right, but she clearly actually wants to date him, which as soon as he asks her out, she's super excited about it.
But to an excessive degree, like, and then she goes, did you forget about picnic? It's just like, she seemed like her intelligence had gone into double digits. It's like, God, she's a scientist, not a bobblehead.
I wanted to see them actually have their date and actually talk about science.
Well, I mean, she's basically the epitome of the thing that people complain about, which is that when you mix men and women together in a serious work environment like a science lab, it's very bad because the women will cry and or distract you with their hotness.
That just pisses me off.
Yes, that's correct.
It's such an easy switch. It's so easy.
Yeah, there's really no reason why she couldn't have been a better character, and it's very frustrating.
It even just something as small as like making it so that she actually is really good at pool, and then like that even that I mean, one small
even
thing would improve
something
so
small
much.
Like making her actually good at science and Frank actually respecting her.
Yeah, right, like in that scene, right when he's trying to ask her out, if what he said was like that paper you wrote on blah 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 was revolutionary, I thought it was amazing. Like where he gave actual specific details instead of this kind of like, oh yeah, your work is really awesome. Want to go on a picnic, lady? Hey.
Or like even her just saying when she's told about the cat, like she could easily have a line there. She was like, oh well, blah 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 blah, science fakery. That makes sense of the whole artichoke thing, and that would have just established her as like clearly a respectable scientist who understands about artichokes.
Yeah. Yep.
But they didn't do that. About artichokes. They just made her really dumb.
Yeah.
They did, and it's super frustrating. But I feel like every old movie we're going to watch is going to do this, and it's...
Not always. Like, I remind you that this was made in 1978. It is post-Star Wars, and I would say that Princess Leia is a better character.
She's a badass.
Definitely.
The first time we meet her, right, all she's doing is she's basically a super spy for the frickin' Rebel Alliance.
So what I'm saying is, like, no, it's not every old movie.
I know.
Sometimes. And there are also new movies that do this very badly as well.
I feel like it was, like, really endemic to Disney movies from that time.
Yeah, that's probably
true. That seems possible.
But, I mean, you know, it's the classic, like, princess bullshit thing.
Yeah. Damn it. Yeah. Now you make me think about how awesome Leia's character is.
Well, let's move on. Was that your dislike as well, Sean?
Okay, so my dislike is about something you started talking about, and I
want to... Oh, okay, are we going to get into that now? Because that's... All right, go for it. Say your piece, and then I'll have mine.
Yeah, I figured I'd go in, because then we could have
let's do it.
Forth. So, I wrote a sentence, and it goes as follows. Just as I do not need talking babies to reenact poise-coital adult rituals, I do not need the talking cat to talk about how much he wants to make it with the Earth Kitty.
Okay, that dynamic was so creepy because you have the space cat who can transfer his thoughts and we can hear everything he's thinking, but there is no indication that the Earth cat actually has that level of sentience, and she's just basically mute and sitting there, and he just kind of comes up to her and he's like, hey baby, how are your whiskers looking? Pretty hot.
Mm-hmm. He does this constantly. It's creepy.
Creepster. And then like also there's absolutely no indication of her thoughts or feelings. So like if they could have just been like, yeah, cats actually all have psychic powers, we just normally can't hear them because he's wearing a special collar, we can. It would have made it so much less creepy, because then we could have believed that she was like, yeah, I'm totally into it. Maybe they could even give her a collar for a couple of minutes.
Well, there would have been cool. He had an extra collar.
Yeah, he had an extra collar. There's no reason she shouldn't have been wearing one.
I was hoping when I saw the extra collar it was going to wind up on the other cat. I was disappointed.
Right, that would have been cool to have, like,
instead, it's just like, hey, you're going to be a mute damsel that I am going to project on and basically just kind of decide that we are now lovers, which is super creepy.
It's sort of like the skunk of the Pepe Le Pew.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like Because in Pepe Le Pew, he's the only one that talks. She just runs all the time, and he just chases her. It's almost the same thing, except she doesn't run, I guess, because she's like a Persian cat, and she just, like, lies there. But
I mean, the only thing that's at all remotely encouraging about it is that she doesn't act super freaked out. Like, he sniffs her nose, and she just, like, sits there and takes it. But she certainly doesn't seem enthusiastic.
Yeah, it's just, and I feel like, as I was watching this, that there is this constant, like, adult pun going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I thought about that, the more I realized, like, if that's there, they put that there to basically, for, like, all of the dude bros who were basically making pussycat jokes.
Oh, yeah, no, every single time they talk about so-and-so and the pussycat, it's clearly ridiculous adult material creeping into a kid movie for no reason.
I started doing it. I was like, oh, and then I started realizing, like, I'm fucking turning into a teenage boy watching this damn movie, and that's actually irritating me. I shouldn't be reverting back to, like, I'm just basically gonna, like, revert back to, like, I'm gonna become a cosmic baby at some point through this process. It's gonna be awful.
I mean, the whole upshot of it is that Liz is a dumb blonde, but she's cute and she has a very nice pussycat.
Oh.
No, but, like, that is basically what the movie is telling you.
That's
what she's useful for.
No.
Because like, her nice pussycat is there for the pussycat from outer space.
I can't do it.
But, like, I'm not even joking. I'm just saying that's actually literally what the movie is telling us.
I know that's what but of course there's that other stupid layer, and you know that's what they're thinking because it's 1978.
No, that's what I mean. It's terrible, it's absolutely despicable that that's actually the message the movie is literally giving us.
I mean, thank God that maybe, like, 8-year-old kids who saw this movie probably wouldn't have got that joke, but...
No, but it's still just horrible.
And there's so many, like... pussycat puns. Like, I think Paul mentioned, I don't remember where you mentioned it, Paul, either off podcast or at the very beginning, when you were talking about, like, pussyfooting, right? They say that at one point, like, people are pussyfooting around. I'm like, because there's cats. Get it? Stop it. If you're gonna go cat puns, at least make them good.
Amen.
So, with that second like...
Yes, please. Please bring some joy back, Rachel, because I'm so angry right now.
It's okay. Oh gosh, I have so many to choose from. Vaughn, I'm not allowed to use that one.
You're not allowed to use that one? Isn't like a dictatorship where we censor your thoughts.
Because I'm saving it for Julia.
Oh, okay.
I will just mention some of the sass in the movie again. If nothing else, I like the fact that when Jake says, what is it? Man developed tools, agriculture, and a chronic pain in his lower back.
Yeah, I was thinking, wow, there's this strange bit of biology that you throw in randomly.
Yes. I really enjoyed that.
It's true, but yeah, I thought that's odd.
That, and since that one is such a small like, I will also note that I love the visual pun that, you know, you've got General Stilton, and then you have the three officers that he's always ordering around.
Yeah.
And you notice that in order of rank, they go from tallest to shortest.
Yep.
Also,
Colonel the captain to sergeant.
Do you know who the sergeant is?
He's also the voice of the cat.
Yes! And there is that joke that comes up a couple times when he's about to talk, and the general shuts him up. Because we can't hear his voice because he's the voice of the cat. Yeah, it's kind of cute. That I liked. I like that part. Yeah.
Yeah, it had a bunch of, like, kind of cute stuff in it.
It did. When it was really kind of playing on the kind of silliness and just having fun, it felt like it was really on par. And then it would just, like, fall apart really miserably in parts. But, like, that stuff I liked. I love that running gag, right, of the three dudes. And, like, yes, sir, and then the sergeant wouldn't speak, right?
So. Mm-hmm.
I like that bit. Yeah. You're making me think of happy things again, Rachel.
Yes, visual happiness.
I love you for it. All right,
Oh, I love that Jake does not even give a fuck that he's rigging sporting events to get money.
That will feature in later in an item that I will discuss.
Okay. I was just like, such a cat.
Yeah, we will get to some of that, because I got questions, but about that, but I guess we'll save it because Julie will be bringing it up. So why don't we then jump to you, Paul? Okay. Your second like, sir.
Okay, one tiny. I'm gonna steal the Rachel thing, do a tiny bit, and then go to a slightly larger one. Tiny bit is I appreciate the fact that Rachel's movie and my movie for the childhood torture have something in common. They have an actor in common.
Oh,
Roddy McDowell.
I didn't even realize.
I thought, hey, but here he's actually on screen. I mean, yes, he's an antagonist, and he's not trapped in a bulky robot that Sean didn't like. Poor Vincent. You hated Vincent. You're a Vincent hater. But it's like, hey, he's actually in this movie just like in my torture cinema movie.
And he had a super awesome spy radio thing that was a pack of cigarettes and a lighter.
Yeah, tied to the phone. Oh God, yeah. And his upside down camera. It's like it's like playing the film for the Bond villain upside down, and they got their heads look as I was looking at that. I was thinking, okay, they're not going to buy this. That's what I was thinking. Like, okay, he's just going to throw. Like, nope. The Bond villain's totally on board.
With Mr. Olympus.
Mr. Olympus, yes. He almost looks like he's from the evil albino school of evil villains, kind of like in what's his name? The Dan Brown movie. Kind of like the albino monk, except richer and doesn't get. But yeah, so that was actually a small one. The larger one was my favorite character in the pool hall scene, Honest Harry.
Oh, he's like this. He's like a full on mafia dude.
He plays it straight. I mean, he takes the money from both sides. He doesn't take any shit. And when the mafia guy is going to wash on the bed, he says, "No, you don't want to do that." He's an honest mafia broker, and he also is dressed pretty damn dapper. Not as dapper as Rachel, who got compliments at Worldcon for being dapper as fuck. Aww. I had to mention that on the podcast because I was charmed by that. But he's dapper. He's not dapper as you, Rachel, but he is dapper. I appreciate that.
So sidebar here, in my household now, we call that AF. So we would say Rachel is dapper AF. Because at some point, Moss saw on the internet somebody talking about one of their parents seeing AF in all caps and being like, so I keep seeing that children these days seem to be talking about things being AF. What does that mean? And the person was like, it's like to emphasize something a lot because they didn't want to say as fuck to their mom or whatever. So, yeah, I'm like, Rachel is dapper AF.
I am dapper AF.
That should be on your the next book you write. That should just be your bio. Your bio should say Rachel Axe, rocks and stuff, dapper AF.
Well, and also, I'm a professional squirrel whisperer now, so there you go.
Professional squirrel whisperer could be the third sentence.
She's a dapper F professional squirrel whisperer.
So just to divert for a moment, like one of the best moments of my Worldcon was at the WISFIS business meeting when I went up to speak, and I was recognized by the chair as being extremely dapper.
Excellent.
Yay. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I roomed with you during Convergence, and I will say that the closet in our room was 1,000% more dapper just because of Rachel's clothing.
Well, thank you. I try.
I wish I could be dapper more.
You gotta
take some lessons from Rachel, Sean.
I would wear ties, but I live in Florida, and it's just sweaty all the time.
Dude, I live in Houston. Then again, I also don't like walk around wearing that stuff outside. Because it'll just, like, pit stains down your waist.
Mm. Yeah, it doesn't even matter what I do. Because you go inside and it's, like, 90% humidity even inside. It's just sweatville. It's gross. Not fair, Rachel.
Sorry.
So since we've gone now back to a bad place, let's bring it on back.
Does that mean it's now you, Julia?
Is it my turn?
I think
it is you. All right, cool. So this is kind of... I had to shush Rachel because it's a big part of it, but it's part of an overall thing. So we'll start with a thing that Rachel started to describe earlier, which is that Frank has this amazing Rube Goldberg contraption that involves a mouse running on a wheel that ultimately powers his tea or coffee making device. So he gets a cup of coffee or tea at the end of it. And it's like, it trickles into the cup until the cup is full enough, and then a bell rings to let him know that, like, hey, your coffee or tea is ready, which is amazing. But this is part of my overall, like, that the movie actually does a lot to try to bring us practical effects that are awesome. So, like, we have this practical effect of this Rube Goldberg machine with a mouse running on a wheel making a cup of coffee or tea. And later in the pool hall, we have all of this stuff going on with, like, sometimes the tape is rewound or whatever, so we can see the balls going back into their formation. But, like, there's also stuff flying through the air. There are multiple points. Like, there was a point where the artichoke thing was spinning, and Tori, who was watching it with me, was like, state-of-the-art CGI. And I was like, no, this was not CGI. This was pre-CGI. Like, that artichoke is a physical object. It's probably hanging from a string, and that's awesome.
Yeah, that was because he pulls this little stick thing around it, right?
Yeah. So I thought that basically seeing all the different little details that they actually put the effort into making fun practical effects out of was really cool. And I would love a mouse to make my coffee or tea every morning.
Yes.
He even thanks the mouse.
Yep.
He knows where it came from. He gives the mouse all due credit.
And I mean, the mouse seems to understand.
Even Liz thanks her, the mouse.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That mouse has got a good gig right there.
Yeah.
He's got a job. He works. Pays his taxes. It's good stuff.
Yeah, because mice care so much about paying taxes.
How do you know what mice care about? Are you in their minds?
It's because of the corporate socialism that
might
pay taxes.
No, you can't bring stuff off of the podcast
Sorry. We're meta. Yeah,
because listeners won't understand. It shouldn't.
Moon logic.
But if they put the collar on the mouse, maybe we would know what the mouse thought.
Oh, the extra collar?
That was a weird car noise.
Not mine.
Yep, that was mine. Sorry.
Also, another question: does he just leave the mouse in there when he's not at work?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the mouse's home.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Because mice live in little cages like that, and that mouse had a cage to run around.
Okay, I just want to make
presumably
sure.
Presumably, the mouse was also fed and watered, and you know, not gonna starve while Frank was not at work.
Yeah, you'd hope. Given that he probably was about to get arrested and put in prison for 25 years, but...
Frankly, I was a little confused about how that was Frank's office when it seemed to actually be more like his apartment.
Yeah.
Like, because Link kept coming over and being like, I'm going to borrow your TV set because my wife is going to watch the opera.
Well, no, that was his apartment. Where the mouse was, that was his office because it looked like he lived in a SAC grad student basement office.
Two different sets. Okay, I didn't realize that. I thought they were the same set.
They were both so 70s-tastic, it was kind of hard to tell the difference.
Well, fair enough.
That actually does goes to a dislike of mine. But yeah.
But we will have to come to that
so
later.
Okay, so Sean, what's your second like?
My next like is, I kind of mentioned it already, but I want to talk about it again anyway, which is every time Frank talks to the cat as though he is having a conversation. And I'd mean that even before he realizes the cat talks. So, like, there's that great scene when he's in his basement office. I'm assuming it's in a basement, right? It looks kind of like it's in a basement. And he's, like, talking to the cat and explaining to the cat, like, all of the science he's working on, like, or sort of kind of explaining it. And he's just talking to this cat. And I love the scene because the cat seems attentive. He's like, oh, like, I'm paying attention. And, of course, then when the cat actually can talk, like, he talks to this cat, pretending that it's actually talking to him. And it's just really nice. You know? You could tell he's a cat person. They hired only cat people in this movie, except the villain, who's clearly not a cat person.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, the villain's a dog person for sure.
You have obviously researched this matter.
I know for a fact. I've checked. No, I haven't. I've not checked any of this. Yeah.
It's a Sean fact.
No, this one I'm not going to say is a Sean fact, because Sean facts are true. And I really believe in telling the truth to the listeners, so.
For certain values of truth.
All values of truth, including the full truthiness and nothing
so
but the
truthiness. So I will say that when he was talking to the cat, it reminded me of, there's an episode of Midsummer Murders, which is a British murder mystery show, where, and it's pretty late in the show, that the first main detective has actually left the show at this point and has been replaced by his cousin, John Barnaby. And John Barnaby comes to town with his dog and, like, has this habit of just talking through all of the detective work he's doing with his dog. And somebody at some point is like, "You're talking to your dog? Isn't that a little crazy?" And he's like, "Well, no, he's a Sprechhund. It's only crazy if he talks back." Like, a Sprechhund, it's a dog that you talk to, duh. And I'm like, yeah, that's basically what Frank is doing with his cat. He's like, "I had to tell you about this science cat."
Also, he just seems like, he just, this cat shows up and he's just like, "Alright, I'll just talk to the cat, whatevs." Like, he's a lonely man.
Or he's a man who likes animals and believes that they could be talked to a lot.
I mean, he talked to the mouse, so
yep.
We have presents.
Where do you think he got the mouse? It probably showed up one day and he's like, "Hello, Mr. Mouse," and then he, like, lured it into its trap.
Oh, no.
You're making this sound a lot darker than it was. Like, it seemed like the mouse was pretty excited to be there.
Well, yeah, because it gets free cheese all the time. I mean, it's a mouse. It's got a brain the size of, like, what, like a pea? How big is a mouse brain?
Have you never seen Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Or did mice rule the universe or something? I can't remember.
Yes.
That's right, because at the end of the Hitchhiker's Guide, right, they're the two little mice at the end.
Yeah, they're the panda-dimensional beings.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And then they get smushed.
They'll get smushed.
They do in the movie.
Oh, okay. That's where you're going with, yeah.
Nah. That's the only one I've seen. Anyway.
I've consumed every variety of the Hitchhiker's Guide, from the radio to the book to the TV series to the movie.
Did you play the game?
Yes, the damn babblefish machine. Ah! Oh God.
See, I didn't play the game, but I know enough people who have.
Oh God.
But I know that people get really, really frustrated by the fact that apparently, in order to win that game, you have to have picked up a piece of lint.
Yes.
In the very beginning, and not let go of it until the ending.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's mean.
Yeah.
Also hilarious.
Those Simplecon games punished you severely for not picking up stuff and taking it with you. Yeah. It was bad.
I just know a lot of people who are super bitter about having gotten all the way to the end and not winning because they did not actually pick up and carry with them a piece of lint.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's Infocom for you, baby. That's Infocom. And you thought crews were bad. No. Not until I got to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I realized how sadistic Infocom could really be.
All right, why don't we move on then to our second dislikes.
All right, it's the final round, and it's where everything gets real.
Everything, because it hasn't been real already.
It's our last chance. Let's give it all we got. All right. Go, Rachel.
All right, so I really fucking hated the pool hall scene. Like, there were little moments of it that I loved, like, you know, every time Honest Harry spoke was just magical, but it went
why
on.
Why would a crook be named Honest Harry?
I mean, I love that. But then there was, like, it went on and on and on. And the thing, it's kind of telling that I don't even remember that much of this movie clearly because I watched it when I was so young. I did not even remember that this fucking pool hall scene existed because it was so, I'm guessing it was so boring even then. Like, I even remember the stupid airplane chase scene that goes on forever and is really dumb.
Shut up. Shut your mouth right now.
I remember that, but I don't remember anything about the pool hall scene because the pool hall scene is so terrible and boring. And I was just watching it. And, you know, when Jake wakes up and they're, like, super excited because they're like, "Oh, okay, this way we'll be able to, like, win the game of pool and it'll be good and we'll get the money we need." And instead of, like, being smart with how he cheats, it's just fucking ridiculous. I was just like, The mobster should have beaten you to death with pool cues.
Yes, exactly. Or shot you. Yes. I can't believe they let them out of that pool hall alive. It's like, what the hell?
Yeah, with $100,000+.
Yeah, exactly.
$120,000, which they then used to buy gold.
Oh, God. Oh.
Which isn't suspicious in the slightest, right?
Okay. Maybe I'm going to switch my second dislike to that. Never mind. Okay. I can rant on that instead so I can save other stuff. But please go ahead, Rachel. Sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, no. I mean, that's really all I've got because I was just like, oh, please. And I mean, I get that it's a kid's movie and they're playing it for laughs. Well, that, and I was also just extremely insulted that they somehow decided that Liz had won despite the fact that she sunk the eight ball before the end of the game.
Nah, fair point.
Mm-hmm. So she lost, actually.
I don't know enough about pool to have caught that.
You don't sink the eight ball.
Yeah, eight ball is always, it's like basically you have an odd number of balls, which kind of like makes the eight ball sort of the locus of everything. So both teams are, you know, the stripe team and the solid team, you're trying to get all the stripes in and they're trying to get all the solids in, and the eight ball has to be last. And if you sink the eight ball before you've gotten all of your other balls in, then you lose. You're done.
Yeah.
Huh. I learned something. Huh.
Yeah.
You've learned a thing.
Yeah.
Learned a thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we will come to more of that sports-related stuff in a Julia-centered dislike, I'm sure.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, why don't we jump to you, Paul? Your final dislike, sir.
Oh, dear God. Okay. So, even if you buy the premise that, okay, what we need is $120,000 worth of gold. And even if you buy the premise that somehow they get out of that pool hell alive with $120,000. Even if you take all that, where are you going to find, especially in, it doesn't look like this is a very large town. I mean, it's a town with an army base. It looks kind of like Southern California. Where are you going to find on zero notice $120,000 worth of gold to buy? And who's going to sell you gold in a bullion ingot like that? I mean, this is before I think they, I mean, the movie is set somewhere in the 60s, judging from when they do a little bio on McLean Stevenson's character we see on the computer. He was in the Navy, and then he was in joined the ECI. So we get the sense, okay, the movie is set sometime in the 60s. And I know sometime later in the 60s, they actually made it illegal to buy and sell gold in large amounts for a while in the U.S. So I think this movie is set before then. But even then, there is no way in hell you're going to find $120,000 worth of gold to buy, or anyone's going to sell it to you on short notice like that. That's going to send the U.S. Treasury Department sending up every red flag there is. There's no way you're going to get that gold. No how, no way.
Not to mention, who other than, like, what's that fort that has the big vault full of all our gold?
Fort Knox.
Fort Knox, right? Which, there's no gold actually in there, but they like to pretend there is, so that our money seems like it's worth something. But like, who honestly, like, I can't imagine any other place that would have that much gold just lying there.
The most gold in the United States in one place currently, I think, is still underneath the FRB in New York.
Right, and you don't just waltz in there and be like, I would like to buy $120,000 in gold in one bar.
Yeah, they're not going to give it to you. They are just not going to give it to you. Actually, small amounts are actually in the other feds, or at least used to be. I think they all consolidated to New York. But yeah, you don't get to do that. So that kind of blows the whole plot of the movie out of the water, but you know, so I think, okay, how are they going to get this gold? And suddenly you just see that giant block of gold sitting on Frank's coffee table. It's like, what the hell?
They went to the Kroger and like picked it up next to the potato salad. It was the 80s.
That's true.
The 70s.
Movie's set in the 60s, though.
But it was released in 1978, and about 1978, there was time travel.
Time travel. This is not bloody predestination.
I feel like actually this is a really good question to ask our friend Kevin.
Like, oh, Kevin,
if
anyone would know how it is that these people could get their hands on an ingot of gold like that at this time, and when this movie is actually set, it would be Kevin.
Can Kevin also explain the conservation of mass issue, because it's just really bothering
me. I'm sure if anyone knows, it is Kevin. If anyone could explain the science of this movie, it is absolutely Kevin Lutz.
Do you think Kevin knows whether or not cat-like alien species have actually visited the Earth? And if so, does he actually think that the cats, the domesticated cats we have here, are actually the descendants from alien cat species?
I'm sure if Kevin doesn't know the answer, he has theories.
Okay.
So let's ask, we just need to point him toward this episode. So, Kevin Lux, by saying your name, I assume I've invoked the magic spell that will bring you here.
Well, you got to say his name three times in a row.
So you have to be like, Kevin Lux, Kevin Lux. Kevin
I feel Lux, like Kevin he's Lux. Probably he's paranoid enough that he's got an alert out on his name. So even if we just say it on the podcast once, it will attract him. But yes, we'd love to hear the answer to these burning questions on Doorway to the Hidden World.
Yeah, this is really important. Like, the salvation of America relies on it.
Love your friends at Skippy and Panty.
All right, well, why don't we jump then to you, Julia, for your final dislike.
Okay, so this is going to be my free-for-all. This is an interesting movie, and it's an interesting movie because while I was watching it, it reminded me a lot of Chomps, which you guys didn't watch, but I wrote up for the Skippy and Panty blog when I did one of my Netflix showdowns, and I did Chomps versus Paws, which were two different dog sort of tech movies. Mm-hmm. And in Chomps, which is also like a 70s live action family film, but it's a Hanna-Barbera film, there's a dog that's a robot, and there are all sorts of hijinks that happen, and the entire cast is made of adults, much like in A Cat from Outer Space, which is, again, a family film where the entire cast is made of adults and there are no children whatsoever. So I kind of watch these things and I'm always, like, wondering what exactly... Like, the adults don't act like any real adults would ever act, because they're all acting a little bit weird and immature in certain ways. Like, the mobster's not actually beating anyone up, for instance. And the like love interest always being kind of like weird and never really going anywhere, because you're not going to really have them actually have a romance because it's a G-rated family film. And that's also true in Chomps as well. But the thing that like really got me about this one is that none of the stuff that actually happens in this movie makes any sense as a family film. Because if you think about it, this movie's message is basically, if you need a lot of money, that what you should do is drink some beer and place some bets. And if those first bets don't work out, place bigger bets. And to ensure that you actually get the money, cheat, because nothing bad will happen.
Yeah, pretty much.
And like the cat from outer space, who is our lovable character that we're supposed to cling to, you know, the E.T. before E.T. was E.T. of this movie, is like, yeah, let's rig some sporting events. That sounds like a good idea. And it's not even like the first time, it's just like on a whim. And he's like, why did you do that? And he's like, oh, any friend of yours is a friend of mine. But actually, I didn't like that guy and I wanted him to leave.
But see, I think that shows the actual cunning of the screenwriters, because it shows that they understand cats. Because let's be honest, cats are assholes.
Cats are immoral.
Well, I just want to know, Rachel, how much this formed your ethics. Because how do you feel, for instance, about drinking beer and cheating in sports?
I'm okay with drinking beer. I'm not so much on cheating in sports. I think it's because I think what this did for me was it formed my love of cats.
So if I were to propose to you that we pull a hustle on some mobsters,
I would probably think that's a bad idea because I have a self-preservative instinct. But see, this is the thing. I think it did train me to realize that cats are furry little assholes. Like, because you notice, think about it. So Jake gets them to the pool hall, and they go to the pool hall because they're like, oh shit, and Jake wakes up, and he's like, okay, you know, I'm just going to do this thing that amuses me, because if anyone gets beaten to death, it's going to be the humans. They're not going to hurt a cat. People like cats.
So, I have to challenge Rachel on something she's already said here. She says that she is not for the cheating on sports, but since I know she was involved in the Pete Rose betting scandal, that's obviously a lie.
Damn it, Sean! I told you that in strictest confidence.
Well, don't tell me your secrets, because I'm gonna reveal them when you try to lie about them in public. You know this. To be fair, she was really smart about it, and only Pete Rose went, you know, got in trouble for it.
Well,
so.
Yeah, because I was see, that's what I learned from this movie. I was smart like Jake. I was like, what would Jake do? WWJD.
Well, what would Jake do? What would Jake do? But like, who's going to blame the cat, right? Like, nobody's going to think that, like, oh, the cat did it. That's totally true.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he ruined it at the end when he revealed that he could talk to people and make judges fly.
See, and that's why the ending is just terrible, because if he was a true cat, he would have just been like, went on pretending he was a cat for the rest of eternity and fucked with people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He would have dropped that judge on his head and then laughed.
See, we all know cats.
That's what a cat would do.
He wouldn't have laughed, though. He would have sat there and done that kitty slow blink and purred.
So, like, what we really need to ask ourselves is, WWZJ590D47 do?
Yes!
Yes, because his full name is, like, Zubnog.
It's Zunar J590 Doric 47.
Yes, that. There's a slash in there and all that. Yeah, that's very
good. Yeah, also known as Jake.
Also yes. known as Jake. Yeah.
It'll be on his mugshot.
Yeah. That'll be confusing.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, basically, the thing that really gets me with all of these action movies that are made for families and especially for young children, which obviously, like, did work because Rachel, as a 7-year-old, totally ate this movie up, feature casts that are all adults who don't actually really act like adults or like people.
No, they definitely, it's they act like cartoon characters, you know?
Yeah, and in Chomps, that's definitely obviously the point, because it's a Hanna-Barbera production, and it's really obviously a live-action Hanna-Barbera cartoon. The Cat from Outer Space is slightly different, because it's Disney, but it still has the same kind of, like, the adults here are, like, there are no children in this movie, but all the adults are, like, not actually adults either.
Huh.
But, like, this movie, clearly, like, they were all adults. They were all drinking beer and placing bets. So a that's not cartoonish. Something the kids would be doing.
No. It's a marked contrast. I was Googling to see if I could remember the title, because I can't remember the title. There was a Disney movie from long ago with kids and a talking cat called The... And I found on IMDb, The Richest Cat in the World. I only remember one scene in this entire movie from watching it, is when the kids find out that the cat can talk, and the cat has money hidden in a copy of Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations.
Wow. Oh my god, that's amazing.
That's the only thing I remember about this movie at all, that this cat could talk. There were the two kids, and the cat had money stuck in this Adam Smith copy. Yeah, that's the only thing I remember about it. So yeah, I managed to Google this with movie kids Wealth of Nations cat, and I came up with it.
Yeah, wow. So we're gonna need to watch this movie, I think.
this particular
model of weirdness, like, it's definitely not. It's not even. It's fair to be like every old movie for kids was like that, because if you look at like 1964 when Mary Poppins came out, that's a family film with kids in it and also adults who, like, at least you can kind of see how their motivations work and they don't seem as, like, ridiculously non-real. I think part of it was that, like, nobody in this movie actually has any depth at all.
Except for the fact that Mary Poppins is, like, giving the kids, like, cocaine.
She's giving them sugar.
Yeah, sugar cocaine, which is why they had that weird hallucination with all the animated creatures.
That's magic. But, like, the thing about Mary Poppins, though, is that if you look at all those characters, they all have some kind of complexity, and they have motivations and clear kind of, like, you can see where they're coming from, and you can see what's going on. And you don't sort of wonder why these adults are, you know, trying to hustle mobsters and not getting beaten to death, for instance. Like, when Mary Poppins takes the kids to the bank to feed the birds outside and, like, buys the tuppence a bag bird food and starts feeding it, and then Mr. Banks gets super upset, you can understand the motivations on all sides of that. Like, those kids are like, yeah, I want to feed the birds. And Mary Poppins like, yes, I will buy this tuppence bag of bird seed from a bigger woman. And Mr. Banks is like, do not encourage homeless people. Mm-hmm. But all of those are pretty clear, like, clear motives in play. And in this movie, it's and also in Chomps and in other movies of that ilk, it's just sort of like, yeah, I don't really understand what is happening here and why. Like, the whole thing about Liz coming over and being like, you forgot about our pig. I'll just go get the vet.
Yeah, and then the vet just sedates the damn cat.
I'll just go get the vet. And the vet, the vet's like, this cat seems perfectly healthy. Sure, I'll sedate him. And then, yeah, like, Liz is suddenly sure, I'm going to play blindfold pool at a pool hall. Why not?
Can I just say, that guy's not a vet. Because there's no way, like, he grabs this cat and he's, like, poking it and grabbing its face and he's, like, poking his fingers in it. Of course a cat's going to be tense. Like, that's a weird experience for a cat. That's not how you handle a cat. I have a cat. We all have cats. You don't do that to a cat. Of course he's tense.
Say cat again.
Cat. Damn it.
Cat.
That made me so mad. I don't think that guy's a vet. I think he's up to something.
So let's move on. So, Sean, what's your final dislike?
It's the final dislike.
Yeah. I have a quick question first. That was like a fake cat that they carried around when the cat was sleeping, right?
I didn't think so. I thought it was the same cat.
How'd they get it to sleep?
I don't know.
Oh my god, don't tell me they, like, sedated the cat.
Oh, I don't think they sedated the cat. I mean, I assumed that the cat was an animal actor who was following the commands of its handler.
Oh god, I hope so, because if they sedated that cat for, like, hours...
I'm pretty sure they did not sedate a cat.
Oh my god, I got so upset right there. Nobody, let me just say, like, nobody sedate my cat. If I tell you don't sedate my cat, don't sedate my cat. I'll punch you in the face.
You will hurt us.
That made me so mad when the vet... I don't know why that made me mad, but I felt like if that was my cat and you sedated my cat after I said don't, I would punch you.
Because it's animal abuse.
Well, what is the vet doing treating the cat without the consent of the cat's owner?
What?
There are so many things wrong in that scene. So wrong. And in the entire movie, really.
God, I was so mad. Anyway, okay, so my final dislike... is I gotta be honest, I fell asleep during the final chase scene at least 3 times.
Oh my god, the
and
chase
I'm
scene.
I'm not sure how long that scene actually is, but it felt like fucking forever. Like half this movie was just that scene. And so for those that don't know, Mr. Olympus, the reject Bond villain, kidnaps Liz and flies away in a helicopter, and Frank thinking like, well, we gotta save her, so we need a plane. What kind of airport is this? It doesn't have a plane. And Jake sees this dilapidated bi-wing and is like, yeah, let's just make that fly. And so they fly in this, like, you know, plane that's got mold and, you know, probably crickets and shit living in it. And then they spend, I swear to god, like 40 minutes flying through the air trying to get people out of the plane, out of the helicopter. By the way, the helicopter, for some strange reason, gets seized up, and they can't turn it or move it, so it's just kind of...
It's not a strange reason. That's because Roddy McDowell.
Whatever. I fell asleep during that part, I guess.
Yeah, it was not exactly tense.
Point being, right, like, so they all jump out in their parachutes, except for Liz, because she's gonna be killed anyway, so they spend, like, 10 minutes trying to get her out of the, like, they get the cat first, because the cat, for some reason, is easy. By the way, bullshit. bullshit, the cat is easier to get out of the frickin' helicopter onto a biplane than the human. That's bullshit. Have you ever tried to get a cat out of a moving vehicle?
No. Like, it really depends on the cat, because some cats are really chill and other cats are not.
I feel like any cat would be losing its freaking mind if it's not, in a helicopter.
Not necessarily. And remember that Jake is not actually a normal cat. He's a fully sentient alien cat being who knows exactly what's going on.
But the other cat isn't.
Well, unless we take it as given that actually all cats are. I mean, I don't know. Or that Jake's calming presence. Yeah. I don't know.
Are you suggesting that the entire domestic cat population on the planet is the result of thousands of generations of alien cats getting stranded on Earth and having to put up with being here?
It seems possible.
Okay, that seems likely.
I
would like that explanation a lot better than she is just a normal cat who doesn't know what's going on and is just lying there passively while a sentient cat licks her.
Yeah.
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 There's all sorts of consent issues.
But like that, yeah. back to the whole chase thing. I was watching this with Tori, and Tori, who is really into old planes and stuff, like she's just really fascinated by that stuff, was like, yep. I have never been so bored watching someone wing walking in my entire life. Because there totally is an extended point where somebody's walking along the edge of the biplane's wings. And it's like, yeah, this shouldn't be as boring as it is, but oh my god, it's really boring.
It's so boring. Oh my god. And like they do the thing. This film's got some terrible special effects where they do like really cheap ass green screen, and they do the thing where like the plane flips upside down and like he flies out and he's hanging on and he's yelling at the cat, save us, because somehow the cat has magically stayed on the plane, even though the cat is in even less of a position to be attached to the plane than the person in the cockpit. But, you know, that's normal.
Well, the at times incredibly fake-looking cat.
The at times incredibly fake-looking cat.
Cat.
I feel like the cat looked a lot like the for real friend that I got to use as a purse when I went to the Hugo ceremony in San Antonio.
Yeah.
But this scene just goes on forever. It's just so much.
The pacing in this movie needs a lot of work.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, it's like 104 minutes long, so they had minutes that they could have cut out of the really kind of long, overly long. I mean, the pool hall scene should have been a lot shorter, and the chase scene should have been a lot shorter, and it would have been a much better movie.
They could have brought this movie home. It's 86 minutes, and it probably would have been a lot better.
Yeah, this is the first time I agree with Julia about the time that she's actually provided.
Like, 86 minutes is your solid action movie, B-movie time limit, and usually that's just enough time to really get into things and get out of there and not have too much extra stuff.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah, but I literally fell asleep. Yeah. I have no idea how long that end scene actually is. All I know is I kept waking up and it was still happening.
It's 123 minutes long.
The action scene?
Yeah, it's 123 minutes.
Oh, the movie. So it's over 2 hours, and it really should have been closer to an hour and a half.
No. That was a joke on my part.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I was so confused. I was like,
yeah, sorry. I think the actual, like, the real number of the movie is it's like 104 minutes, and yeah,
I think mine was said like an hour and 43 minutes.
Right.
So yeah, they could have easily cut at least 15 off of that, and would have been fine.
If not more.
Yeah, like 15 or at a stretch 20. I think that any more than that and you'd run the risk of it not feeling like a full-length movie.
Yeah, an hour and 20 minutes I think would be probably, or somewhere in that general vicinity.
It's like 86 minutes-ish is usually like the standard for those kind of things, just under an hour and a half.
Gosh, that would be wonderful.
Because kids, tiny bladders and short attention spans.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, we made it.
We made it.
I'm mildly intoxicated. And this
I
is
am
wonderful.
As well.
I love you, Rachel.
But let's not go too far.
It's a friendly love.
Well, the power of his love and the power of this magic collar he's holding means that now you're levitating. How does that feel?
What would Jake do?
Well, this means we need to get to our grades. We have to grade this film. And that means that Rachel, the fumble master...
Sorry, I just knocked my own headset off.
Fumble master.
That means Rachel needs to tell us her grade and her last final quick thought, and then we will go down the line. So, Rachel, how do you grade this film?
I think it gets a solid C. It was okay. I wouldn't, like, stab out my own eyes before I watched it again, which still makes it better than Mac and Me by a long shot.
You're wrong.
I mean, it would be very possible to do a supercut movie, or a supercut of this movie that would get rid of, like, all of the stuff that I found annoying, and it would be over in, like, you know, it'd be, like, 45 minutes, maybe an hour of the cat being really super cute, and I can deal with that.
Fair enough. All right, what about you, Paul?
It's not as bad as some of the stuff we've seen. It's not quite as good as, say, The Postman, which was our last torture cinema, ladies and gentlemen. It's probably about as inoffensive as, say, Kroll, and I gave Kroll a C-, so I'll give this a C-.
As inoffensive as Kroll.
Well, I mean, there's less, like, chopping people up with a super cool weapon, but more of a cat being a giant furry asshole to people, so I think it balances out. That's
fair. Except for Glaive, you have Jake and his magic collar. Exactly.
Yes.
You map perfectly.
If you say so. All right, Julia.
I mean, I think I have to agree that it's about a C-. I agree with Paul about it being about as inoffensive as Kroll. It's not as bad as some of the things we've seen. It's also not as good as The Postman. And I kind of can't believe I'm saying that, but yeah. It's not as good as The Postman, which was better than Waterworld, and it's not anywhere near as bad as Waterworld.
God, Waterworld's awful.
Oh, God, Waterworld.
So, yeah, it's not as bad as some of the stuff we've seen. It did not make me rage as much as, like, Transformers does.
Well, nothing is that awful.
Right. Indeed. But, so yeah, C-. It did have adorable cats, so that is a plus.
Fair enough. All right. Well, I am going to give it a C. I kind of on the same place with Rachel. It's not terrible. It's not great. It's just kind of, it's all right. You know, it's got some cool moments, and it does have a cute cat.
So cute.
Oh my God, that cat is like, oh.
Who's the pretty kitty?
I just want to hold that cat and snuggle it.
Who's the pretty kitty? So yeah, so we average exactly between a C and a C minus on this.
Yep, so it's a C minus-ish.
We got like a C minus plus.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, the ish is the plus, right?
So. Yeah, exactly. It's like a C hyphen instead of a CM dash.
There you go. That's exactly what it is.
Fair enough.
But yeah, also I will say that something else that has come to light recently, which also has been said before, and I should have been saying this all along, this movie, as we mentioned earlier, has one woman in it and does not pass the Bechdel test. But the Bechdel test should be called the Bechdel-Wallace test.
Yes, why don't you explain that for us?
So Alison Bechdel wrote it in her comic, which her friend had actually come up with the idea, and her friend's last name is Wallace. So really, it should be called the Bechdel-Wallace test because Bechdel popularized it, but Wallace came up with it. And Bechdel has said in an interview that she would really like it if people called it the Bechdel-Wallace test. And I even had heard this before, and I don't know why it didn't stick with me, but I'm going to try to make a concerted effort, so I thought I should mention that here for the listeners.
Bechdel-Wallace test.
Yep.
All right.
Got it.
Perfect. Well, great. So we've made it. We've got a C- versus the CM dash, as Rachel was saying, or a C-ish or a C-plus, depending on your perspective. That concludes the second to last Childhood Destruction editions of Torture Cinema. We have one more, and that
it's
is Julia's.
Mine.
And what is your
yours?
Movie, Julia? You want to tell us?
My movie is The Incredible Shrinking Woman, which is from 1980 or 1981 and stars Lily Tomlin. And I watched it a ton as a kid. My whole family did. And I thought there was no way that this would be listed as a bad movie, but was shocked to find when I looked it up that it had like 0% from the critics on Rotten Tomatoes. Like no one liked this movie at all. So I'm really curious to see if you guys agree with the critics or with me that this is actually brilliant. Guess we'll find out.
Well, that will be our September, well, end of September torture. And then we go back to proper voting because guess what comes after that? Halloween special.
Halloween!
Yeah, it's going to be in David's wheelhouse, and he's probably going to cry when we have to watch something he loves.
We're going to watch the zombies of Moritau.
We may indeed have to watch that. We may indeed. So on that note, folks, I don't know, just awkward ending and scene. Is that how it works?
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Well, you have to thank all of us.
Thank you, cat minions. Except Paul's not a cat, so he's not a cat minion.
I also want to take a minute to thank, because we haven't talked about this at all, and I don't think we need to talk in depth about this, but since the Hugo Awards ceremony came out, the Hugo stats came out, and I think 60 people nominated us for a Hugo.
They did.
That's a lot of people, and that's super nice. So thanks, listeners. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. I really do appreciate that. It's a lot of people. I wasn't expecting that, so...
Sometimes I don't even know how many people listen to the show, so I was like, wow, 60 people actually listen to the show at all.
You are awesome. Yeah. You are mighty.
Now, with 60 people listened and liked us enough that they wanted us on the ballot.
High five, guys.
I want each and every one of you 60 people to know that you are the best looking person around. No, you are. Definitely.
And you can trust Rachel, because Rachel, as already previously stated, is dapper F.
Yep.
Indeed.
Word. Well, yeah, so thanks. And I guess that will be the awkward ending and scene. If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Just another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
This is Ripley, last survivor of the Nostromo. Signing off.